Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back the rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
Welcome to the Southpaws, episode 376. Welcome back, Shiva. Woo! I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And I'm Shiva. And yes, I'm still alive, and I'm still part of the cast.
Yay,
Khan
she
just
survived.
Eats my life every whatever month it happens to fall in.
Yes,
next year
survived.
Will be March.
And we're glad she's back, because we're back at Shiva's place. There's Hookah in the background, but probably a lot quieter than usual. And we have all seen Black Panther.
Yes.
Yes. I was joking with Sarah because you were like, you better see it by Thursday. And then he ended up going, say, like, so there's like a 1:45 showing today. And I'm going, and I was like, yes, you have to go for work.
Yep. Well, it was actually really nice because it worked out. It got out right out before 4 p.m., and so I was able to go to the gym that evening with
Panther. Since you make money on this, you could write off the movie ticket on your taxes.
Yeah, technically I could.
A whole $15 of it.
It was like $9. It was actually the matinee price. It was pretty good because it was a 1:20 p.m. showing, and nobody really goes to those. You know, there was a couple of older people and like one family with some kids, but it was pretty empty, all things considered, so yeah. I had pretty high up, but dead center, so I had a really good shot.
You could really man spread if you wanted to, but you're a fennec and have tiny legs. So.
Yep, and they have the little, the recliner one, so they're, like, my legs are just, they're up in the air.
Did you go to Plano XD?
Yeah.
That's where I saw it.
I had to find a time that worked with being able to go to the gym with Panther as well, because I figured if I'm going to be up that way, I should go to the gym.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. And that worked out. So, we're not going to really be super spoiler about it, but you should really go see Black Panther. It is a straight-up action movie from Marvel. There's no, like, forced comedy. There's no...
Yeah, like, it wasn't Thor with its comedy.
Thor with its lulls or Guardians of the Galaxy.
Holy shit. I love... I always get the name mixed up with his father, but T'Challa.
T'Challa, yeah.
He was great, but holy shit, I loved his sister.
Yeah.
And I kept missing the name of like the general, the head of his personal guard army.
I'm pulling up the IMDb article just so we won't completely forget and or mangle their names.
Yeah.
Well, I fucking forget, like,
so
you know,
sister
he could
was...
be named Bob and I would forget. What was their name?
But they only say their names, like, once in the film, so...
Well, he yells Shuri a whole bunch.
Yeah, Shuri is his sister.
Yeah, you're gonna yell at your sister a lot.
M'Baku is the mountain tribe leader.
Yeah, they said his name a bunch. But he also says Shuri's, like, scolding her and calling, like, where are you, you know?
Yeah.
So I knew her name.
Like,
I,
it's hard to start, isn't it? Because it was just so good. Like, there's so many things that are just like, that was good, and that was good. And so our review is, oh my God.
And yeah, I'm really glad they brought it out in February. It needed to be out for Black History Month because, yeah.
I was like, fuck that. This is Black Future Month. Because, like, okay, so, like, as I've talked about on the show before, and we talked about it when Jackby was on, like, I dig Afrofuturism. And so
That was heavy in here.
I was really looking at the world building, the city design, and everything, and how it's like, what would a futuristic city look like if it was designed by Africans? And the set designer in the art, everyone, like, designed this city. It's such an amazing job. Like, it looks it just looks perfect. And there's like, it's very futuristic, very high tech. It's got the maglev tubes and everything. And then there's all the, like, there's traditional African touches from different areas here and there. And
was it you that sent me the article, or was it Sarah, where basically they go and they break down where all the different styles from all the various tribe leaders and what tribes they came from in Africa.
Oh, that must be Zero. I haven't seen that, but it sounds really interesting. Let me see
if I'll find it and I'll forward it on to you. But it just breaks down where all the, like, this is a ceremonial, based on a ceremonial dress of this tribe in this area. This is the language.
Yeah.
This is where this is all breaking down from. And it was actually a really good and interesting
That's read. Really cool because, like, you know, we say Africa, but it's like it's a continent. It's like a shitload of countries and they're all very different.
It's a big continent, too.
And it's like they tried to make Wakanda representative of, like, a shitload of different parts of Africa and different traditions of different cultures in Africa, which is really cool. And I liked reading the interview with Chadwick Boseman, who plays T'Challa, Black Panther, and he was talking about the accent that he chose for T'Challa. And he put a lot of thought into it because he's like, he didn't want to give him, like, some Africans are educated in England, so to go back home and they speak with this kind of British accent. And he was like, he wasn't educated in England. He was educated in Wakanda. And that's an accent that, like he develops, basically. Mm-hmm. It's like how it was very important to him. This character needs to not sound like he was educated in Britain or was colonized or anything. Because Wakanda's never been colonized. It's never been conquered. So unlike all South Africa and all the other countries, like, I mean, like in Congo, they speak French because they were colonized by the French and so forth. And I just thought that was a really cool world-buildy touch that he put in there to, like, bring some realism to his character, which I thought was really cool. The other thing is, like, apparently, like, there's a lot of actors in the movie that we as Westerners would not be familiar with, but, like, they're really well-known actors and actresses in Africa. Mm-hmm. So, like, people in parts of Africa were, like, going nuts because they're like, oh, that's this famous actor from this country is in this big-budget Hollywood movie, you know? I mean, the director is African-American, so that was, like, a big part of his, like, wanted to bring all that in. And the movie is pretty much top down African and African American, nearly everybody involved in it. And it feels really authentic. And I know that's true because people from Africa have actually said that that's true, that there's a lot of authentic things in it. And it's meant a lot to, like, of course, to African Americans here in the US, but, like, to people living in Africa, this is, like, such a fucking big deal. And I like that's super cool.
And what's really cool, too, is, like, Lupita Nyong'o, like, her father is a Kenyan regional governor.
Yes.
So there was an article where the president of Kenya and her father got to go and see
the premiere of it in Kenya. And it premiered in Kenya, I think, a day before it premiered anywhere else.
Yeah.
That's nice.
And then also she went and sponsored a showing for several hundred school children to see the film.
That's awesome.
Because he was like, yo, my people need some aspirational figures too. And it was really cool because the movie is hella black, which is what it needed to be.
Yeah.
And it's a very self-contained action movie. Like, they don't force in humor. They don't spend a ton of time outside of Wakanda. It is set in the place and they get to explore, like, a lot of the culture to a degree, like how they've blended general, like, our Western conception of, like, African city life into, as we mentioned during Dinner Fuzz, like, the skyscrapers and the giant buildings. So, like, at the floor level, you've got the various shops and people out doing their business in amongst the skyscrapers and super techno-future stuff. It was really cool to see, and I am totally down with people being super enthused for the film. I hope that this, between this and, like, Wonder Woman showing that no, actually, there are people that are not white nerds that want to see superhero movies. Wonder Woman did really well. And looking at the opening weekend showdown here, Black Panther did $202 million on its opening weekend, which puts it just a hair behind Jurassic World and The Avengers. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a 5 million difference, and...
That's the domestic.
Avengers had 4,349 theaters at its widest distribution, whereas Black Panther had 4,020. So, 320 less theaters, only 5 million left, 5 million behind. Like, that's really cool. Like, right now it's doing its 277 million mm-hmm. worldwide.
No. Well, okay, is that the rest? Because it's on track to hit a half a billion worldwide, foreign and domestic. Yeah, it's already closing in on 500 million.
Yeah, this is just based on like the initial opening weekend stuff on Box Office Mojo. So
it's doing really well.
Extremely well. It was only slightly behind Avengers, which is the biggest Marvel movie opening that they had.
Right, yeah.
I'm really excited to see how far this goes, because it's a good-ass film on its own.
I was just thinking of that. Yeah, like, you know, if you don't even consider all the, like, the amazing cultural impact and everything that this film has, just as, like, a Marvel action movie, it is a really fucking solid movie and really enjoyable and really well made. And then it also has all this gravitas as this big cultural event. And hopefully it will be a watershed moment for making more diverse films going forward. Of being like, black people can be in leading roles. Black people can be in like these massively successful movies. You have a young black director that directed this film and stuff like that. And like, hopefully give more people from more races and genders opportunities in Hollywood.
The desire is there. And also, like, Black Panther has very little to do with the overarching Marvel Universe. Like, it takes place in it, mm-hmm. and events in the Marvel Universe have affected it. It's like, why T'Challa is king at the start of this film is because shit that happened in Civil War.
Civil War, yeah.
But, like, there's very little interaction with outside Marvel characters because it primarily takes place in Wakanda.
Yeah, there's the FBI agent that Martin Freeman plays, whose name I forget. And then there's the villain that Andy Serkis plays. What's his name again?
Everett something.
Coy or and then, Clow.
Where is it? Ulysses Klaue.
Yeah, who was the guy who stole a shitload of vibranium and got his arm chopped off by Ultron in Age of Ultron. Yeah. And
man, the visuals in this film are so good too. The spirit world specifically.
Oh my, yeah. Like, Savern and I were talking about that earlier. Like,
that gave me shivers.
Like, when T'Challa wakes up in the spirit world, he's wearing this all white robe on a black background, and it is this really sudden striking visual. And then he stands up and there's this just fucking amazing Aurora Borealis effect in the background. And just the lighting and the construction of that scene is, it's just so fucking cool. It just looks so damn good. Just talking about like the lighting and everything put to...
It was kind of chilling. I really loved
it.
It
really
that.
Was. Yeah. It was like sort of like how like with Fury Road, they talked about the color palette used from scene to scene and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And it had that kind of effect where like they did a lot with the color palette and the lighting and the costume choices. It's just a really whoa moment. Very cool stuff.
And I really like the bad guy, Eric. I mean, he was... Mm-hmm.
He's a really sympathetic villain.
Yeah. I love when he takes his own trip to the spirit realm.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not, it's a very sad and melancholy scene, too.
Yeah, yeah. Like, he's such a three-dimensional, quote-unquote, villain. He's a really good antagonist.
Well, then that's also why I liked in Spider-Man Homecoming. Mm-hmm. The Vulture character was also very real and sympathetic in many ways. He didn't feel two-dimensional.
Right, yeah. Yeah, Killmonger's story arc is really good. And I was talking to Savern at dinner, and I was like, it's almost like how Xavier and Magneto both want the end goals, you know, a safe world for mutants.
But how you get there.
But how you get to it. And, like, you could totally see Killmonger and T'Challa's, like, points of view and, like, why their different beliefs in what's right for their people come into conflict and why that happens.
It's also a difference of someone who's been raised in America, sees oppression of their people around the world versus someone who's very part of a very insular culture and mm-hmm. Wakanda is for Wakandans, and whereas Eric was very much our people all over the world.
Right.
Or suffer.
Yeah.
Basically, a lot of people are like, oh man, but Killmonger was kind of right. Up until the point where he's like, I don't want the sun to set on the Wakandan Empire. Also, we're going to give people weapons and they can kill their oppressors and their supporters and their friends and their children. And it's like, okay, wait, hold up.
But like, at the same time, like, his ultimate goal of wanting like justice for his people. And I like the eventual direction of it is T'Challa finds the compromise in that.
Yeah.
You know, with what he ultimately does.
It's going to open up a bit to the world and sets the first Wakandan embassy in Oakland, California.
Yeah.
Which he's like, all right.
I guess, well, that's a minor spoiler, but...
But it's good that they did kind of find that compromise where, you know, T'Challa realized that Killmonger had some good ideas, but maybe let's not murder a bunch of people, mm-hmm. but let's begin exerting some influence on the world because we have the resources and the ability to do so.
Right, right. And I feel like I'm leaving so much out because I saw the movie Sunday night.
And I don't want to give it away too much for people, too.
Yeah, and
it just came out.
I've been reading articles, and I've been thinking about it, and I've had 4 days, like, mulling this all over, and, like, there's so many things I was like, that was cool, and this happened, and I'm going to leave out, like, so much in my thought. There's a lot to say about this movie, and the only bad thing is I want to see it again. my only criticism is that it's not available to download on iTunes already.
Yeah, me and Sarah are the same way. It's like, I want to go see it again.
Speaking of downloading Marvel movies on iTunes, though, Thor Ragnarok dropped.
Oh, nice.
So if you need to go and pick that up digitally, you can do that. Also, I was on that Disney Anywhere thing, because like when you buy a Blu-ray and you redeem the code on it, mm-hmm. and you can connect it to your iTunes account or your Google Play account. Or your Amazon account. Well, they moved over to a new platform. They're calling Movies Anywhere. And I think this is probably as a result of them acquiring Fox and a bunch of different stuff. But when I did that, when I migrated my account over, they gave me like 4 movies free.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Yeah, it was like Jason Bourne, the 2016 Ghostbusters, Big Hero 6, and... another one I can't remember right now.
Big Hero is still one of my go-to. I want to put something on. I'll just put on Big Hero.
I haven't seen it.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. But now I own it, so like I can watch it whenever I want. I also haven't seen the Ghostbusters.
Have you seen Coco yet?
No. I mean, wow. I don't really go and watch animated movies anymore. Zootopia for obvious reasons, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, so this last Saturday we had... Short Tail over, and we watched Coco. Shorty let drop that he had never seen Zootopia, and we looked at him and was like, do you have to turn in your furry card?
Really? From
So we put that on next, and he really liked that. He's like, because he was kind of dubious. It's like, you know how something gets overhyped, and it can't be. No, it is a good movie.
People like that piss me off.
Well, that's the one thing. Like, a lot of people were concerned about it when it came out, because, like, furries had been hyped about it for like a year and a half before its release because, you know, we first heard about it. We're like, oh, this is going to be really good. And then it's like, will it actually live up to what we want it to be when we finally get to see it? And then we finally saw it. And majority of us were like, yes, this is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
As an anecdote related to Black Panther and whatnot. So I went to Target today and they're practically sold out of the toys.
Really?
Like, most of the stuff on the pegs was gone. There was a single Marvel Legends Killmonger and a single Marvel Legends T'Challa. And, like, 2 of the smaller figures. And they have some, like, the kids' dress-up stuff, but all the action figures that they had were just gone. So that was pretty cool.
I hope they gave all the women action figures, too. I don't know how you cannot give, like, the head of Royal Guard, you know, an action figure and stuff. So, you know, but then again, like...
I just loved her when she was dressed up to the nines and had, you know, because...
Had the wig.
It's like, this. It's disrespectful. You know, that's so...
Yeah, because did you notice, like, they were bald, but they all had, like, different kind of tattoo designs on their heads and stuff like that, which is super cool. I have to admit, like... So, I mean, I'm not really a comics reader anymore, and back in the day, I only read X-Men. So, like, I'm not familiar with, like, the comics of pretty much any of the MCU. Like, I never read Captain America or Avengers either. So, I mean, I'm coming into...
I haven't read it since, like, the 90s, so it's been a long time. Yeah,
so I'm coming into Black Panther pretty much as a newbie. Like, the only thing I knew about Black Panther was what I had seen of him in Civil War. So, like, I already knew his character from that. And he gets a good bit of action in that, so that's cool. And you kind of know what he can do with physically with his suit and stuff like that. But yeah, coming into this kind of fresh and like not being familiar with, like, I mean, I didn't know that Eric Killmonger is a longstanding Marvel character also. And so is, what's the king of the mountain tribe? But he's a really good Baku. Character. Okay. And apparently, like what we talked about at dinner was he's Manape in the comics, and apparently is like a really problematic character. So when it was first announced that this character was going to be in Black Panther, a lot of people were like, ooh, how are they going to do that and make it not really racist? But
it became their
They didn't fucking call him Manape for one thing, so that was good. I like how they did the ape thing and had the ceremonial mask of the ape and stuff like that. But
and they were a very separate tribe.
Yeah.
With different belief system, different worship. Because there was very much, you know, I think they made some comments about your God versus our God. You know, they...
Mm-hmm.
I like the whole, like, quip when they're facing down with them. We're going to, you know, eat you. It's like, just kidding, we're vegetarians. That was great.
Yeah.
Okay, so Fuzz, to answer your question, in this wave, and so they have Killmonger, T'Challa, and Nakia as primary characters, and the chase build-a-figure when you get all six is Okoye.
Oh,
okay, so cool.
The head of the guard.
Mm. Nice,
all
right.
So
build-a-figure?
So with the Marvel Legends series, you have to collect all six, and you get, like, one side has the arm, or a leg, or the torso, or the head, and you have to pop them all together.
Huh,
and they come with, like, a secondary accessory for the build-a-figure, but it means you have to purchase the six $20 figures to get the seventh in the set.
Mm.
But
he's the one I want the most.
Yeah, I would have made her a main figure, I think.
Nakia, she has the Dora Milaje armor that she wore and the big-ass chakrams that she had at the end of the...
Mm-hmm.
She was using. Very cool.
So, that's really cool. Again, it's neat that they're getting these action figures.
I wish I didn't have to buy, you know...
Yeah, exactly.
And it's really cool to see... I think he's the head of the guard that she played, but she's the actress who plays Michonne in The Walking Dead.
Oh.
Where she has hair. Mm-hmm. So I have a hard time recognizing people if they grow facial hair or put on an eye patch or something. So, like, being bald, it's like it's not completely obvious. But in Walking Dead, she's like this major fucking badass with the sword that is
and
like...
And she's still a major fucking badass?
Yeah. So, like, when I heard she was cast in this movie and what role she was going to be playing, I was like, oh, that's fucking perfect, because I know this actress already has these crazy fighting skills and weapon skills and stuff like that.
I love when the guard first comes in and just all that, and they call her that Grace Jones motherfucker. Yeah.
There's some two Grace Jones looking bitches out here.
Yeah, and that's a very, you know who Grace Jones is.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, so it's like, wow.
Well, in 92... she would have been a more current reference, I suppose, than nowadays. But yeah, no, I totally remember.
So moving on to the next thing, I went to Lush the other day. After I did jury duty, I went to Lush. These two are separate. Because I had jury duty here on Tuesday and ended up not having to actually be on a jury, which kind of was okay. I was like, maybe I'll get something interesting, but I didn't get called, so whatever. I went by Lush, and they're doing their How to Be a Trans Ally thing. They got their Be Yourself body melt thing that they're selling that 100% of the proceeds is going to pro-trans charities and whatnot. And they actually have a little pamphlet, like How to Be a Trans Ally.
It looks like they cover a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to be all, like, super in-depth on it, but it is really cool to see a company do this in the current year. And the fact that it's not just kind of a throwaway, okay, we're going to give like 10% of profits to this. No, they actually said that it's 100% of proceeds from the sale of these little $6 bath melts. And they actually they foam up blue and pink in the water. Like when you put it in the tub, it foams up and it has blue and pink swirls and it has various essential oils in it. It's supposed to be hypoallergenic. I haven't used mine yet. I haven't taken the time to do it because I'm going to like sit in a tub for an hour, which will be nice. But I also bought another...
So when you put it in the bath, that turns the water into gender fluid.
Yes. And I got another bar of soap that's been making my bathroom smell really great. It's over there by you, I think, or it's behind the laptop.
It's behind your laptop.
It's like elderflower. Mm-hmm. It's really nice. It's all very rather expensive.
I told Saverin we should just crunch it up and put it in the hookah. Ooh, because it smells good.
I wouldn't want to smoke that.
Yeah.
It smells really good.
Yeah, it smells really good. The whole shop smells really good.
Well, yeah.
And they have a number of things around the shop that's like... Because it's not just a bath melt that they're selling that goes for charity. They also have like some body butter and some other stuff that's, you know, very nice, bit expensive, but whatever.
That's Lush in general.
Lush is very bougie.
Yeah.
So is Lush basically like a high-end Bath and Body Works?
Yeah.
But they do a lot of natural products.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all handmade stuff. It's not...
It's not mass manufactured. At least
that's what they say. It's kind of all handmade stuff. It's a lot of natural-based stuff. So it's a lot less chemicals.
So like you said, it was like hypoallergenic because like... A lot of really fancy, heavily scented shit is like I sometimes react to that. Not always, but so that's probably good. Speaking of soap, though, I've been washing my paws with contact caffeine soaps for a while now. It does smell delicious.
How does that shit work for you? Does it actually like function caffeine wise?
You know, I think it does because like I alternate when I shower. Like some days I'll lather up the contact caffeine. And use that, and some days I'll just use the regular shower gel. And I feel like sometimes when I use the contact caffeine, like I come out of the shower feeling like really alert. So I think maybe there is a thing to that. If you're trying to quit caffeine or you're not into using caffeine and soap, they do make uncaffeinated versions of pretty much most of their scents. And I mention this now because the last 2 years they've included a contact caffeine in the super sponsor bag at Furry Fiesta. So I got one last year, and that was the first time I tried it, and then I got another one this year.
Okay. Yeah, I was sad this year, because I really like contact caffeine. They make a sandalwood-scented soap that I loved, and apparently they're not doing it. They may do it again someday, because apparently it's highly requested, but it's not in their current product.
You know, let companies know when they don't have a product on hand that you really like.
Yeah, I mean, I told Mally directly that, hey, I really wanted this. Is that they're like, yeah, we know.
And I mention this because for Planet, we carry the hard blush stuff sometimes, like the Big Boys Town hardcover, which had been out for several years now. And so usually for stuff like that I order for distribution, if I run out, I'll wait a while before ordering more of them. Just because, I mean, yeah, we are spending our money on other things. You know, I got like probably 3 or 4 emails from different people saying, hey, I'm really interested in this out of stock item. Are you going to carry it again? So I went ahead and ordered more after a bit. So, you know, yeah, let people know when there's like something you're interested in and then want to produce another run of it or whatever.
Yeah, and that's just it. It's like I walked up, I looked through their shelves, I didn't see it's like, do you have any of the... And they're like, we used to. We're not making it currently. We get asked for it. It's like, well, maybe next year. And they kind of said, I don't know if it just wasn't popular and I'm one of the freaks that likes it. But I really love sandalwood.
Sandalwood seems like a pretty common scent. So you'd think that would be readily available or popular.
Maybe it was a price issue for the oil or something. Because Saro has... For shaving, he uses an actual, like, sandalwood oil instead of, like, foam or anything else like that. Oh. And I love it.
Is that good? I thought of that for shaving. There's a lot of, like, high-end shaving shit that I don't know about because I just use, like, Gillette or whatever.
There's a store called Art of Shaving where it's got a lot of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Basically pampering for men.
It's kind of something about the 21st century that's come about. Not just for men, but, like, a lot of, like... Here's this utilitarian thing that we've done for centuries, and now we're going to make it, like, super-duper fancy stuff. Didn't Panther get, like, a big set or something like that, Saverin, where it was, like, super fancy shave cream or yep. something like that.
We basically kickstarted a bunch of different razors from like Rockwell and a couple other companies. And that comes with various shave butters and whatnot and beard oil and yada yada. Like he uses like the Nivea post-shave balm and whatnot. So he does have some fancy stuff to go with.
What's his regular... Nivea post-shave balm?
It's basically facial lotion.
Oh, okay. So well, at first I thought you said shave balm, like bath bomb.
No, B-A-L-M.
But you said balm. I was like, okay, all right. Yeah. That makes more sense.
Shave balm. You just hold against your face. It goes...
Yeah, I was... That's why I was
wondering. Different from a bath bomb.
That's why I was like, what the fuck would that be?
No.
it explodes on his face?
It doesn't sound pleasant.
Nope.
We call it the airbag experience.
The next little bit. So, Shiva, how was your fiesta? You survived it?
So... That was probably the hardest fiesta I've ever done. Moving hotels is hell. Whenever you see a new, you know, a con announces a move, or it's like, why haven't they moved yet? The process of moving to a new hotel is about double to triple the work of any given year. And this year was no exception. Because you have to do all the layouts and all new shit. I have never... been as tired, as hurt, and as burnt out as I was for this year. I mean, I got done, and I was in pain for days. Like,
aww.
Just my hips hurt, my back hurt. Just, it didn't help that on loadout night when we were packing up the truck, I walked down to ops to get something. And I'm wearing shoes, so I'm actually wearing sneakers as opposed to my usual sandals. And there's a cord taped down on the floor, and I kicked it.
Ooh.
And it didn't move, unfortunately. I wish it had. Mm. It felt like I kicked a rock or a piece of metal or something really hard, and you know, let's just say I'm probably going to lose a nail in my big toe on that foot.
Oh.
Because it is... If I didn't hairline fracture it, I did something really bad, and it is very unhappy. I can't really... This has been a really hard year for me. Between changing jobs now twice, and this new job is really chaotic. I'm running really low on spoons. And just fiesta has been hard, and it's gotten to a point where I need to start dropping some responsibilities and just slimming down what I need to do, because it feels like I am in negative bucks.
Aw, yeah, like a lot going on like that. I'll do that to you. That's
and it's a lot of it is. I mean, in my first job that I had at the end of 2016, yeah, mm-hmm. 16. I had been in it for 8 years. It wasn't that taxing. I could squeeze in fiesta stuff around what I was currently doing. All this other stuff. And then when I changed jobs and I worked for Microsoft for a little bit, that was very, very easy dumb. I mean, I had to take care and not screw around too much, but the job itself was not hard.
Mm-hmm.
And then with this new, the job I got like last June is the polar opposite. It's very hard. It's very busy. It takes a lot of emotional and mental and everything to maintain. So that eats up a lot of my mental energy and resources. And it makes doing fiesta hard because I'm already feeling taxed. And then the stress from fiesta piles on top of it. This was hard. Usually when I'm done with fiesta, I feel like I've accomplished something and I've a job well done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't always say I have fun, but I feel like I've gotten something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
This time, I just feel burnt out.
Oh.
And I've never felt like that after fiesta before.
Yeah.
So...
Maybe time to reduce some of your responsibilities.
Yeah, but I'm also... It's fiesta, it's work, and I've also been doing full-time rating. Well, fiesta's wrapping up. Ratings wrapping up. That just leaves me time to think about job.
Mm.
And just, and like I said, I've been president of the board for 7 years, and I'm going to be stepping down as that.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if I'm going to take a hiatus from board, you know, like just not get reelected or whatnot, but I need basically a year of not having as much responsibility. Its responsibility really does is part of it, because you can't really turn off. Yeah. You have to always be aware. You have to always be ready to answer and do things and handle it. And I basically need to be less responsible. Mm-hmm. Like, I could step away and I help out, but I'm not the one driving it. I'm not the one organizing it. I'm not the one who's following up to make sure everybody's doing their part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's partly it, I think, for me. I just need a little less responsibility, a little less having to manage everything, that and things will be better.
Yeah.
So that's why I don't want to step away from Fiesta entirely, but mm-hmm. that's why I'm shedding some of the board responsibilities. That's why. Yeah. You know, so I'm stripping away so I can prioritize the stuff that I still want to hold on to.
Right.
And go from there.
Yeah.
So Fiesta was hard, was the long story. Mm-hmm. Fiesta was very, very hard.
Yeah.
And a lot of it was leading up to Fiesta and not the event itself, but it all rolls together.
Mm-hmm.
Fiesta was physically hard and long days, but everything leading up to Fiesta, being president, being exec, being part of the, you know, upper tier, that took a big toll on me this year.
So attendees, that when you get upset that a con is moving hotels or moving dates or something like that, this is not a decision that the staff takes lightly.
Oh, God, no.
And they don't just be like, we're just going to change hotels. Like, it's a major turning point for a convention.
It's a huge three-ring circus of trying to get everything done.
I stayed at the hotel most of the weekend.
I love to stay. I actually, of all the places we've been, I've been to, you know, we had the Crown. Yeah, the Intercontinental. I've stayed at the MFF. MFF.
MFF, yeah.
Whatever three-letter acronym that is. MFF's.
MFM.
They had the best fucking beds at this Hyatt out of all those hotels that we've stayed at. I slept the best at this Hyatt.
It was pretty comfy, yeah.
Yeah. Though I don't understand the barn doors to the bathroom. The two sliding clack doors.
So I hate that, like, there's no way to turn on that shower without getting shocked by freezing cold water.
Oh, I didn't have that problem.
Well, like, the sliding glass door on one side of ours was fixed.
Oh, I didn't have sliding glass on ours. But then again, you had, like, a patio suite. Normal ones just had a fucking curtain.
In the suite thing itself, we actually had a handicapped accessible bathroom.
I know
bathroom.
What you're talking about. When we toured the hotel, we saw that, and it's like, and I said the exact same thing, because there's a hard sliding door or a hard pane of glass that blocks you from being able to reach the taps and turn it on.
Yeah.
You have to step into the shower and turn on the shower while you're standing in the blast of the shower.
Right.
I saw
and
that.
And then day one, you're standing there in front of an unfamiliar shower, so you don't know, like, how much to turn it to not scald yourself. So you're standing there in this freezing water going, trying to move it over.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like, the one on the suite was handicapped accessible. It had no barrier at all. There was a shower curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, you could step out of the way and do whatever. I didn't shower in that room. I was in the adjoining bedroom, which had the fixed glass on one side and the sliding glass on the other. And it was really just, you had to step into the shower. And
even if you know exactly from the black shower where you need to put that knob, there's still always the flush.
The cold water that's in the pipes already, yeah.
And you still always get hit with that. Yeah, I saw that when we were touring the hotel and we all went, what the fuck was somebody thinking?
Yeah, yeah. Someone was thinking of the design that this looks nice. They were not thinking of the user experience. Bad UX design on that shower.
You should do, okay, guys, now you take a shower in that and see what your problem is.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the people that design showers like really cold blasts in the morning or something. I don't know.
Sometime after the podcast, I will rant to you on the problems with bathrooms design, stall designs at women.
Oh.
Yes.
Let's see. The next thing on the agenda is YouTube has stolen my dimes.
Yes.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's Aaron. You talk for a while.
Okay, so I mentioned this a little while back that YouTube has changed their monetization strategy.
Yep.
Previously, you had to have only hit 10,000 views to get to be able to get dimes for your videos, right? You could be a nobody, but make a really good viral video. But if you don't have 1,000 subs and 4,000 hours of view time in the last 365 days, you're shit out of luck and can't make money on it. So basically, I fell 4% short of the goal at the deadline. And there's like $60 in an AdSense account that was too low for them to pay out that I'm never going to see again, probably. I mean, yeah, it's $60. That's not a ton of money, but it sucks because it was just so fucking close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
yeah,
just, it's frustrating. And it's really shitty because this is affecting a very large amount of people.
And when do you get it valid again?
Basically, once I've crossed over the 4,000 hours threshold and have stayed over it for a little while. Like, you have to do it for, keep over the threshold for, like, a month or something like that. So, basically, I've been doing some stuff that nobody's fucking watching. It sucks. People are watching this on my YouTube channel, which helps, but I think one of my fucking Wolfenstein Let's Play, I think one of the videos had zero views after a day for whatever reason. I'm like, well, I guess that's really not that interesting a game for folks. I'm finishing it up, but I probably won't be doing more. Because it's frustrating. You got to be doing the new hotness, and I was just trying to play games that I hadn't played, which really is better suited to like Twitch.
Mm-hmm. Well, it kind of sounds like you've been approaching it more of a hobbyist way, I guess, just playing what you want to play. Like, if you're going to really build up a following and really try to make like a big monetary thing, like, it seems like you got to be on it fucking constantly.
Yeah, you gotta have the console, you gotta be playing the fucking new hotness. Like, if I really wanted, I gotta be fucking playing Monster Hunter World and Dragon Ball FighterZ and Subnautica and whatever else. I had been, like, I took a big long break from it because I was feeling frustrated with it, and I was like, oh, well, I want to keep my monetization, but I didn't make it, so that sucks. I did put out a little video today for them's Fighting Herds, which finally did come out after, like, 6 years.
Mm-hmm. It does look cute.
It's cute. So, I was talking to Fuzz on the way over that the game doesn't really have an identity. It started its life as Fighting is Magic, which is a My Little Pony fighting game that people had basically been working on for a little while. They had, like, 4 of the 6 characters done. It was the main 6, and they were fighting, and they had backgrounds and all this other stuff. There's a lot of work involved. But then it caught the eye of Hasbro, and they C&D'd them. I had to go look, but they C&D'd them back in 2013. February 8th, 2013 was the date that they got the cease and desist from Hasbro. And it's now February 22nd, 2018. They basically they tossed everything away and had to start from fresh. And they didn't even make that much money on their Kickstarter because, well, their Indiegogo only crossed like 436,000 out of 400,000. And that's not a lot of money considering the window of time that they've been working on this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's come out on early access and it's actually missing the proper final animations for a number of attacks and things. So like the Twilight XP Oleander, a couple of her attacks are like cardboard cutout versions.
Mm-hmm.
It's cute that they have little placeholders, but it's very obviously placeholder. It's weird though, because for a lot of people, they lost a lot of interest when it wasn't a fandom related thing anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And all the characters are still XPs. They kept some of the original voice acting because, I mean, it was sound alikes. And they even kept like the HP profiles. So certain characters have more HP than others. Like, the Rainbow Dash XP has less HP than the Applejack one. And the Fluttershy one is kind of middle of the road. So, they kept a lot of their prior work, but they had to file all the serial numbers off.
Yeah.
And so, it's kind of a thing without a market. It's only got 6 characters, so it doesn't have a ton of variety. And while the actual combos, like the fighting system's really good, it sticks quadruped animals kicking the shit out of each other. It doesn't have a market.
Yeah.
Like, I think the people that are going to buy it are the people that have already put in the money to the Indiegogo. Mm. This isn't going to be like some hot stream game that you're going to see money matches at Evo for. So it's really kind of sad in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because, as I said, I've been keeping track of this game from when it was incepted as a pony fighting game. And at the time, it sounded really cool, and they had fandom musicians working on the stuff. And they had a couple of the themes that had gotten out there, and it was exciting and cool.
And then Hasbro killed it.
Hasbro killed it, and so a huge chunk of the people interested in it went, oh, well, it's not Pony anymore.
And then a lot of the people working on it might have, in some smaller capacities, probably left as well.
And then here we are, 6 years or so after the idea started, we finally have this game that's out there that doesn't have much of an identity. It's cute, it's well animated, don't get me wrong, but there doesn't seem to be a big intersection between cute quadruped animals and fighting games.
At least not when ponies aren't involved.
Yeah, like, if it had been Pony, it would at least have the remnants of that fandom to latch onto it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm gonna say, I'm talking about that Fat Fur fighting game that was being developed by, like, one dude, and I'm just gonna say, it was made in Mugen, but he already had, like, 8 characters done, and it was being done by one dude, so I'm not disparaging the work of the people at Main 6, but I'm just gonna say that this one dude has busted out this stuff in a much shorter period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I don't know the first thing about the difficulties of game development. I'm not gonna be like, oh, they should have done this better. I'm just kind of, at this point, it kind of came over the finish line and fell over, and I'm just like, well, it's here. Shrug. And I feel bad about that, because I was really interested when it was a Pony game, and then, like a lot of people, when it got C&D'd and had to become its own independent entity, I stopped paying attention to it for a really long time. We backed it on Kickstarter, and it's like, oh, the game's out today, and I'm like, oh, I checked my email, oh cool, there's my code, and plugged it in, played a little bit of it, recorded enough to make a video, got absolutely destroyed by the baseline AI, which makes for a really crummy video. Because it's like, I'm playing as the characters, and all 6 characters are represented, but the AI is literally stomping me into the dirt on the default. Like, the first round that I played, I got perfected by the AI.
Wow.
Like, what the fuck? So, they got some SNK hard, just basic AI, and I guess that's good if you want to practice against that to eventually play versus people. But casually picking it up and getting utterly destroyed the moment you play the single player is like, I don't know. Because this is not something where it's like prestige get good. This isn't Dark Souls. This isn't, you know, Bloodborne where, oh, it's got a reputation as being this super hard game series. You gotta be good. This is a goofy little cartoon animal fighting game.
Mm-hmm.
So that was also on the list. Just kind of discuss and be a little disappointed in. Like, the music's real good. It has a smart music system that blends the themes of the two characters that are fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes depending on the dominance of the character.
I don't know if games could do that. That's cool.
Yeah, it has a lot of neat systems in place, but it's just this weird orphan game. So,
maybe they can reskin it with something else other than...
Maybe, and Fuzz and I are going to sit down and play some together and record it. Here at some point, maybe this weekend.
And since I barely ever play video games, I'm a button masher when it comes to fighting games. Like, I loved MK3 back in the day on the Super Nintendo. So, I mean, I will be an easier challenge for you than the AI.
It'll be just fun to play around with, so you can actually both get a handle on the characters.
On what they do, and...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than being like, okay, I'm gonna play versus the AI... 12-second KO.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well,
the AI's really good.
Yeah, I mean, and again, they spent the time to do it. They probably spent a lot of time making the AI real smart. They do have online net play, and they also have a thing called, like, the Pixel Lobby. It's kind of like how the lobby system works in Dragon Ball FighterZ, where you have a little avatar that runs around a world, and you can challenge people directly that way. So that's cool, but we'll see how long that stands, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have to, like, maintain a server for that kind of thing?
They do have some servers, but you can set up your own. They have some dedicateds, but it can also be set up by individuals, I think.
Okay. Because I wasn't sure if that was something that, like, Steam handled, but I guess Steam's just, like, a download library kind of system, right?
And I tried to play a couple of games online, but both the people that I played against had either really shitty connections or lag switches because it was impressively bad. Let's see, what else? Billy Graham died. He is now in super hell, so there's that.
Oh, I hadn't heard he had died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, happened the other day, and good riddance.
Yeah.
So...
On that note, it is kind of pissing me off that, like, he's fucking getting the Lion State at the Capitol building or something like
what?
That. Yeah.
What?
I know. It's like, he wasn't like a government official. He wasn't some beloved senator or a former president or anything like that. I'm like, don't they just do... I thought they just did that for former presidents and other like super important people. Like, you know, the oldest senator died or something like that.
Yeah. It's really weird he got the Lion State.
Yeah, I was kind of like, what?
How did that...
I know, and it's also... It really tweaks my separation of church and state kind of thing, too. You know, it's not like if we had, like, a Dalai Lama or something like that. You know, it's like, yeah, the Pope dying. Sure, I can see, you know, he lies in state in his country. Mm-hmm. And he dies. But it's like, we have so many Christian leaders in this country of all the different sects and stuff like that. And I'm just like...
Why does he get the Lion State?
What makes him so fucking special? I mean, because he was an extremely hateful person.
I mean, and he called AIDS a punishment from God. He wanted to nuke North Vietnam. You know, it was mentioned, it's like, yeah, when Henry Kissinger tells you to, whoa, settle down, Satan, you know you're not on the right side here.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that he's like, he's lionized because, oh, he's Billy Graham and he was this big evangelical. No, he was a big evangelical and that's a bad thing.
He took a lot of money.
A lot of money from a lot of people and caused a lot of hardship for people like us. Mm-hmm. And that's what matters in the end.
Yeah, and that's why I'm like, fuck that guy.
Good fucking riddance. So, we do have a couple emails because we are coming up on 10 p.m. We need to hurry things up. Mm-hmm. So, we can email us at southpawscast@gmail.com, pause with an S. You can find us on Patreon, southpawscast, etc. But we do have four emails, so we're going to start from this one from Anonymous. Anonymous has asked a question. Dear Saverin, did you ever receive the afro I sent you in the mail? I sent it a while ago, but haven't heard anything about it on the podcast. A fur working in a wig shop. I have not received any sort of afro wig in the mail.
Did you receive one for Saffron's behalf?
No. Like, I think the only time we put out our P.O. box was for the bottle of Coke Zero Sugar.
Which I think is at your house now, Fuzz.
It is at my house now, yes.
Because I was going to be like, oh shit, she was back, we should grab that. And then I didn't. Because we right. have the bottle. We had somebody send us a bottle of Canadian Coke Zero Sugar. They spent like $17 to send this 1 liter bottle of soda our way. And we haven't drunk it yet. I'm sorry. I took it over to Fuzz's because I was looking for it at home and then realized, oh, it's at Fuzz's after we had already left your place.
Whoops.
Yeah. Oh, well. If you'd like to send us me an afro wig, I think the question was if I'd do a stream in an afro wig if somebody sent me one, and I was like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I can I'll stream Wolfenstein on Twitch in an afro wig. So yeah,
did
sure.
you ever give me your address?
Well, we put out the
Because
the
this box. Goes back a while, and I don't know if we
I don't know if I ever did. Yeah. He says he mailed it out, but I've not received any
so
sort
I'm like,
of wig.
So where the fuck did he mail it?
That's a valid question. So, next email, Fuzz, do you got your phone?
Sure.
Yeah.
This one called Interesting Idea. Greetings, Southpaws. I had an interesting idea after watching a Rumspringa documentary. Now, if I recall, that's the Amish, the year, their gap year that they get to go out and like,
experience the world and decide if they want to be Amish.
Yeah. So here's the idea. Have it be socially acceptable to have an identity Rumspringa. Say, when you turn 18 for a month, you could be free to explore your sexual identity and gender without fear of judgment. At the end, you could settle on what suits you best and have it be accepted by society. Curious for your thoughts, Anonymous. So, like, I think that's a really neat idea, sure.
I think it takes more than a year, though.
I also kind of think that that's what college is.
Yeah.
I mean, for a lot of people are like, yeah, I did some shit in college, you know, but I'm mostly straight, you know, that kind of thing. Not me, I'm not, but it's a cool idea. I like the concept of, hey, you could do this and not have societal disapproval on you. But I also think, like, you should be able to do that anyway and not have societal disapproval on you, you know? Like, I mean, I guess that would be like a good stopgap or something. But like, if you want to, right now, I mean, if you want to have casual sex with any gender in any position and change your gender identity for temporary or permanent, or express yourself in any way. I feel that you should be able to do that. I'd rather see society catch up to that in a general sense, as opposed to this. I mean, it's not like a bad idea, but I'm like, society needs to move along anyway before to even get to the point of like, oh, this temporary thing.
Yeah, there's actually a tweet from Soma, Final Boss Femme. Tired. Furries are lame and weird. Wired. It's 2018 and furries are internet culture. Even regular people have personas. Inspired. Having an identity you can freely negotiate for yourself in a hostile and oppressive world is a miracle, especially in the context of gender and sexuality. So that's actually, I've seen from a couple people where they're like, well, since I went furry... Uh-huh. You know, you've seen the various people, like, such and such needs a fursona, and various people jump on it. Yeah. But also, like, people that are like, yeah, I've felt more, been able to be more myself while online because I have a fursona that is this identity that I have shaped rather than who I am RL. And so that's actually really cool. So, like, yeah. Furry is actually really good about allowing people to explore their gender and sexuality.
Yeah. So, Fiesta invited a comedian.
I was just going to talk about that.
Yeah. Cody Melcher.
So,
to us.
Let me preface this with, so, he was at HavenCon last year.
Okay.
And I met him there. Found out just recently that he actually bought a 2017 calendar from us.
Cool.
It had been on his house wall all year, and that's not leaking customer data. He tweeted that, so that's public. But I wanted to say, hey, I'd met him there, and then a year later, over to you, Shiva.
So he came to TFF, and because I do all the, I tend to do a lot of the flight and travel booking for the con, but he came in, and by the time he left, he had adopted a raccoon fursona. And yeah, and he wants to come back next year. He had a great time and loved us.
That's really cool. I'm really happy to hear that. Because all I saw online was that, like, yeah, he has this other Twitter account for his raccoon fursona now. So.
Nice. I've seen...
We've adopted someone else. We adopted a lawyer. Now we... You know, the fandom needed a new not shitty comedian. So we've adopted Cody Belcher, and he's got the persona. Yes.
Yeah. It's like, we grab the good people and say, come, be a furry. And that's worked out pretty well so far. We got a notification from Sofer. So do you want to hit that, Shiva? Or do you want to read the longer Your Con Rocks email?
I'll do the Your Con Rocks.
Okay.
Okay, so I'll read the So Furry achievement. This is funny. Congratulations, Notcast. You have unlocked a new achievement. 50 profile views. And this actually was like, we set up a Notcast account on So Furry? Like, I guess we did, because it came to our email, but I had not even remembered doing that. So, yay, we got 50 profile views, which is impressive considering we've never done anything with that profile.
I didn't even know we had a So Furry account. I wonder when that was created.
I probably registered it back in the day.
Grab the name.
The name, yeah.
All right, so Your Con Rock, Shiva. Hit it up.
All right. Hey, this is Raven from Lawton, Oklahoma. I had a very wonderful time at Your Con this last weekend. One could arguably say they may have had a bit too much fun, but I won't get into that embarrassment right now. Anybody who knows me will know what I'm talking about.
Oh, dear.
At any rate, you threw one hell of a fucking party in that really nice hotel that you scored, and I was super impressed with how nice and helpful the hotel staff were. To Savin directly, your game room was fun. Unfortunately, I can't play Smash Worse Shit on the Wii U, but I tried. To Fuzzwolf, I saw a lot of books. However, I couldn't afford them. Aww. I just got a new job today, so be looking forward to some orders.
Yay!
Shiva, the dealer's den was everything I hoped it would be and more. On a side note, the writing track was awesome. It helped me out so much that I'm getting back on the horse and taking another crack at writing a book.
Oh, that's great.
I just hope that Fuzz's slush pile will be manageable by the time I get around to a final draft, because this time I'm in it to win it. I hope the three of you avoided the crud, and I hope I will see you all next year. Your White Wolf listener in Oklahoma, Raven.
I think I was the only one that avoided the crud.
Yeah, mine was really mild and lasted.
I didn't have crud. I just had a lot of fucking pain.
Oh, okay.
No, this is nothing contagious. This is all the fact that I'm 40. Right. A fat nerd who barely doesn't do a lot of physical activity the rest of the year. And then I clocked in, I was averaging, because I turned on the pedometer on my phone halfway through Wednesday. And then I was clocking about between 6 to 7 miles a day. And that's when I didn't forget my phone behind on, like, the table by the den computer, because I was tethered off of it. So I went from doing very little to suddenly you're walking 6 miles or 7 miles a day. And yeah, your body pays a toll when you go from couch potato to, you know.
7 miles a day.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say something about the dealer's room that, like, so I didn't walk around the whole thing. I walked around a little bit. But first of all, compliment number one, I love the mile and a half of space behind the tables. I was so used to our staff tripping over each other, getting books and stuff like that before. That wasn't a problem this year. It's so good to have that much space, be able to set up like our little table back there to put some of our stock books on and stuff like that.
I can't promise that next year. We're in a different room.
Grr.
Sorry.
Also, walking around the dealer's room, I was like, fuck, this is like Akon. Like, some people had like the really big, like, you know, where they don't take a tables at all. They set up like our like racks that you walk into, like a little store and stuff like that. Like, people up their game. The dealer's room is large, and we're getting like a lot of people that are like really taking it seriously. And like, it just looked really professional and really high end. We're a big con now, you know? So I thought that was really cool. The only downside is I don't like that the hotel doesn't let anybody hang anything on any walls, but that's like the whole hotel, that's door signs and everything. We lucked out that at Midwest, we were in a middle row, so we had to figure out some way to display shit behind us, and that's when we invested in a rack and had some banners printed. And then at FC, the same thing happened, and then at TFF, we're like, well, we can't hang anything. So we'd spent some money getting this banner setup done. And I'm actually kind of glad that we got to use it for three cons in a row, because it suddenly became a thing we had to deal with. So,
and I think it's really good if you can elevate and do stuff like that. I know that there was some grumbling from the vendors. I did it so that the walls were all around the edge of the room, because I didn't know necessarily where the doors were that I couldn't block. But on the other hand, I got a lot of compliments from the attendees, because, wow, I can actually travel, because there's not... If you hit the outside edges, you could go around the edge of the room.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
So that they could actually get places and get to, you know, where they were going, because they weren't trying to fight down the middle of two rows of browsers. They could just hit an outside wall and get around the den.
Are we allowed to talk on here about the room moving situation? I mean, that's not like a
secret. It's not a big secret. It was supposed to be downstairs where Tabletop was.
Yeah.
All weekend long, but we had a conflict with a group coming in behind us, where we lost the room too early in the day on Sunday, so we had to move the den, but we don't have that conflict in the next 3 years, so it will be downstairs.
So this is another thing I have to give you props on, because you had made a dealer map and everything worked out for the bottom floor dealer's room that we were supposed to have, and then found out, not quite the 11th hour, but pretty late in the process, that, oh shit, we don't have this room. You have to move to this other room with a totally different arrangement. And you pulled that off, you know, and it was a really good dealer's room.
That took a lot of negotiating to see where we can get the space where all the dealers... I also tend to hold aside a certain number of tables when I give out all the tables. Just so that if something, oh shit, happens, I can have a little bit of flexibility and I'm not suddenly praying that somebody can't make it.
Yeah.
So I can shrink the room to make more room. So I always hold a couple of empty spaces until really close to the con. Then when it looks like we're almost there, I'll give them out.
Like if you add a special guest really late in the process, or a guest didn't want a table, decides they do want a table.
Exactly.
You have one in reserve.
Exactly.
And if that doesn't happen, then someone on the wait list gets to come to the con.
Or somebody's made a trade or an arrangement and forgot to tell me, which is my biggest nightmare. So
that worked out. My only concern is that our table, for whatever reason, position or whatnot, we had zero problems with getting phone connectivity to run credit cards. But I know some people had issues getting connectivity.
It seemed to be people... It was really weird. It seemed to be mostly Sprint users, but only some had issues and others didn't. Mm-hmm. We had some folks with Verizon, like one or two with Verizon having issues, mm-hmm. and then everybody else was fine. So it seemed to be a combination of carrier and how good their phone's antenna mm-hmm. was.
Most of our team is on T-Mobile, and we didn't have issues.
Yeah, I'm on AT&T, and when we were doing the hotel, we got as many people with as many different carriers as we could to walk around downstairs, mm-hmm. you know, in the pit of the hotel to make sure that we had signal strength.
Right.
And we got someone from Verizon and T-Mobile and Sprint and AT&T. And it seemed fine down there. But again, like I said, some folks with Sprint were fine. Some had a shit-tastic time. So it seemed to be...
It's also different once you pile 3,800 plus people into that building and then everyone's carriers are kind of overloaded. So my only concern about next year moving into the room that we were intended to use is that being further down, we might have even worse signal.
But we're against an outside wall, too. We're outside walls on two sides.
Oh, okay.
So
maybe that'll help.
And we're also looking at, we had some, I wouldn't say communications issues. It was more trying to figure out how much net and what net we needed for the hotel and what's included in the hotel contract versus what isn't included in the hotel contract. Right. And then trying to get PSAV to respond to us when we contact them early on Friday.
What's
to say
PSAV?
That's the company that runs AV and the internet for hotels that are a big company. They do it at, I don't know, like 3/4 of the big hotels in the U.S.
So hotels, instead of having to deal with this themselves, they have a company that manages it.
So contacting PSAV and getting them to respond in an efficient manner to quote us, okay, what can you do? And then just dead silence most of the day, all day Friday. And then finally scrambling, and we set up, basically, we took a sliver of our own bandwidth, threw up a couple of Wi-Fi hotspots, and luckily we have our own internal AV IT department is skilled enough to set up a separate subnet mm-hmm. where only the dealers could use it. We managed to get that done at like 2 a.m. on, you know, between Friday and Saturday, so that when folks came in on Saturday, we actually had Wi-Fi network. It didn't have enough to like do like stream YouTube. Mm-hmm. You tank the whole network if you did too much, but there was enough so that people could run transactions. But that was our internal IT guys frantically trying to set up stuff overnight, Friday to Saturday, off our own, you know, fairly low bandwidth amount of internet, because we don't need much if we're not streaming or something, but we need something to talk to the outside world. Mm-hmm. So we basically sliced off a little bit of our, I think about an eighth of our bandwidth, separated that over to the dealer so that we had something so people could run transactions.
Right.
At this point, we're about 1:20 in. We should probably wrap it up because it's past 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. As always, you can email us at southpawscast@gmail.com. You can find us on Twitter at southpawscast. You can find us on Patreon at southpawscast. We're getting this down because it's all unified now.
Yeah.
If you are hearing this and it's on YouTube and whatnot, you should try subscribing to us on iTunes and or various podcatchers. There have been a couple that have been getting bugged about that haven't updated their apps or updated our new RSS URL, so we're looking into that. When we swapped things around, a lot of people got unsubscribed, and that sucks. Mm. Also, we've added a Patreon RSS feed, so if you're someone on Patreon, you can now get access to a custom feed URL that will drop you the podcast when it is posted to Patreon.
Mm. Oh, that's handy.
Yeah.
You don't have to be up to date and manually downloading shit from Patreon. Then you can just add it to your podcast.
It's like per user RSS download that you just add to your podcast app or whatever, and it'll spit the new Patreon version down to you the moment moment it hits. Nice. So that's cool. So as always, you can find me on Twitter at Saverin Drake. You can find me on YouTube, where I post this audio up there for people to download and listen to. You can find me on Twitch at just Saverin. Where can they find you guys?
In a hole. on Twitter, though, I hardly ever use it anymore, is Chimera, Khymaera. I'm also on Telegram on that. That's going to be the major places you find me these days.
I wanted to mention something else about the Patreon right quick. Saverin and I would mention it before. We did a little discussion of Chopping Mall. after I introduced Saverin to that. And we had a Patreon supporter comment on that, saying Dog Soldiers is a good film. Because we were talking on the exclusive about what other films we might want to look at. And Dog Soldiers is a very good film. It's an older werewolf movie.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. It's good.
Way back in the day. Do you think it'd be too gory for Saverin?
I'm a big boy.
I don't know his threshold, so...
It's not...
Okay, is it comedy gore? Is it splatter?
It's gore, but...
It's a werewolf flick, I mean.
It's a werewolf howling
level. Yeah.
But it's not horrifying shit like The Grudge or...
It's not...
The Ring.
Hostile. It's not Saw.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's not torture porn.
So yeah, I think you'd
it's
enjoy it.
It's just regular old slasher werewolf. Okay.
And
if you can stand some of the early howlings, you'll be fine.
Yeah, and Sean Pertwee, who plays Alfred on Gotham, is the main character in it. He's a British Army soldier. Okay. So that might be one we'll add to the list for Fox and Wolf movie night or something.
Yeah, and we still have Animaleptics, right?
Okay, cool. Yeah, I've got it on DVD. So what's that?
We have Animaleptics.
Yes, I want to show you. Well, I've never seen it all the way through either.
Seen clips. I haven't seen it
me
all
neither.
The way through.
I've never seen it, period.
Yeah.
I've seen, like, GIFs online and people like, this character for Animaleptics, why don't they have any Rule 34?
And what's funny is...
Old. That's why.
Last year, I bought a copy from Gary Aikens in the dealer's room.
Mm. He's got all that old stuff.
Because it never got... At the time, it never got an official DVD release.
Going to Gary Aiken's table is like taking a time travel back to like the late 90s.
Yeah.
I swear his stuff hasn't changed much. He's got some newer stuff. But you go to his table, it's all old furry stuff.
I think like all of his newer stuff is like a lot of anime and such, which I don't keep up with, so I don't really know. Mm-hmm. But like a lot of like furry classics are there, like Watership Down, Plague Dogs, Animaleptics. So anyway, I picked up Animaleptics on DVD, and then I haven't watched it. I've had it a year. And then recently discovered that Animaleptics is actually finally getting an official DVD release.
Really?
It comes out in, I believe, April, if I recall, and it's already available for pre-order on Amazon.
Huh.
So, you know, that might be probably like a cleaner transfer than the one I have. I'm a little disappointed that they didn't go ahead and put it on Blu-ray, make an HD version of it. But I'm guessing it is a very niche film and not very well known outside of our community.
Yeah, it's what was made, I think it was mid-80s? I don't know when it was made, a while ago.
I was going to say late 70s, yeah. Early 80s. It's pretty old.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll check that out too. But you can, so back onto the topic, it diverged there. You can find me on Twitter at Fuzzwolf. If you go to fuzzwolf.com, it's got all my contact information there. Fur Planet and Bad Dog Books, both at Twitter and at .com, are my stores. Kyle Gold, in December, Soap Wolf released the 10th anniversary edition of Waterways. Had some updates to the text and also includes two new short stories. And they did like a special hardcover edition of that. And Kyle is also updating all the ebook editions with the 10th anniversary one. So if you go to Bad Dog now, I've got the 10th anniversary version of Waterways available for sale. And if you previously bought Waterways from us, I've automatically updated everyone's, all your accounts are automatically updated. So if you go back to your downloads tab, you can download the 10th anniversary version if you want the more recent one.
Nice.
As an ebook. So that's pretty cool. And yeah, that's the latest thing I've done on Bad Dog. I've got a couple more things to release, but both my stores have been really busy lately. Bad Dog's doing really well, and I'm having a hard time keeping up with the Fur Planet orders.
That's a good place
to be. Which is a good problem to have, yeah. I've actually taken off today and tomorrow, partly to catch up on FP stuff, partly because it's cold and rainy and I had time off available and I don't feel like standing on a train platform to go into the office. And partly because Sunday's my birthday, so I was like, fuck it, 4-day weekend, yeah.
Yep.
So I'm hoping to get some stuff done and get caught up there. So if you're waiting on your orders, Tieran and I will be endeavoring to catch up on that.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I'm really happy.
Put Ajax to work.
Yes. Oh, and the person who wrote in with the con report, thank you very much. I'm really glad that you're getting into writing again. I want to second him that the writing track was really impressive this year. There was like 20 to 25 writing panels. I only got to go to one. I went to the writer's meet and greet, and the room was packed. Sasuke did a really good job moderating it, and I really want Fiesta to be like a good writing con. And we had a couple writers that this was their first time coming to Fiesta, and they seemed to have a good time, and hopefully they'll be back. And I was like, oh, the other thing I was going to say to the email writer, which you probably heard at various panels anyway, but definitely join the Furry Writers Guild forum. They also have a Slack and Telegram channel. It's a very supportive group. There's a lot of good information there in various forum threads about different writing topics. It's a really good place to network and talk to other furry writers, especially if you're working on your first novel. One of the things in the guild that I think probably just wrapped up is Kyle was running an online novel writing workshop as part of the Furry Writers Guild. So there's like stuff like that. There's also been, it was like a workshop on cover design that Thurston of Thurston Howell Productions did. So
I'd love if like the Furry Writing Guild kind of made TFF their thing. Like they go and they put together things for the Furry Writing Guild and they put on like their own panels.
Well, I don't think we had one this year, but we had a Furry Writers Guild panel last year because Watts Martin, who was at the time the vice president of the guild, was able to attend last year. That's something I could certainly talk to him about and be like, hey, we want more guild representation at Fiesta, maybe drag out a few more people or do an official panel. The other thing that had a panel was RAR, the Regional Anthropomorphic Writers Retreat, which is a 4 or 5 day long writing retreat for furry writers. And they take like 5 or 6 students a year. It's outside of Reno. It's at Tahoe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's they have a really nice location for it. And it always takes place, well, the last couple times it takes place right before BLFC. So if you want to make like an extended thing of it, then you go to the writer's retreat and then you drive up to the con afterwards and attend that.
So like Lake Tahoe? Mm-hmm. I've heard really good things about that town. So
Yeah. So they had a panel about that as part of the writing track at Fiesta this year, awesome. Which is very informative. So they'll probably keep doing that as well. So lots of exciting things for the writing community in furry right now. It's really exploded a lot, and I'd be really happy to see Fiesta be a big part of that. So
the thing about Fiesta and a lot of cons, it's like if you build it, you know, we're the forum. Give us stuff and we'll put it up.
Yeah. Most cons start out early in their cycle as pretty desperate for content. Like, okay, we need panels. Send us panels. You know, What do you want to see here? You know, Fiesta's panel schedule usually gets pretty packed when you actually get to the con. Early on, 2019, hey, there's space. So
now's a great time to, you know, start talking about scheduling, about doing.
Yeah, start thinking about what you want to see in TFF 2019. Mm-hmm. So what's our theme for 2019?
Roll for initiative.
Tabletop role playing.
I don't know whether to give points or take them away for that pun. One thing I like, TFF 2019, we again have a writer guest of honor, self-pubbed writer Jesse Owen, who's written a big 4-part series about griffins. So Sable should be very happy about that. Her books are interesting because she kickstarted them all herself, and like some of like the high-end backer goals are like little griffin plushies and things like that. So we should get her on some good panels about self.
I love that logo. That's on the
Isn't
that a really good logo for Roll for Initiative?
Who does the logo design?
I guess Ringer did with a lot of back and forth with a theme group.
Oh,
but that's a very dynamic logo.
Yeah.
Is the logo up on our website?
She's showing me to be on Telegram from Storm.
It's going
to
be up everywhere shortly, but yeah.
Okay. Because you're showing him something that's not available on the net.
Well, I don't know where it's published yet.
Yeah.
But it's going to be on the registration site.
Okay. Well, let's wrap this up because it's nearly 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And So we gotta go home.
So since I missed it, have you guys come up with a new sign off? Or
it's just kind of something new each week.
Yeah, so we say on that note, good night, and then the and person has to think of
the clever repartee.
Yeah, it's usually big something.
It's not gonna be me because no. I am not feeling clever tonight.
I'm just gonna say good night and Wakanda forever.
There we go. That's a good ending.